life in the land of the ice and snow. My name is Heather, and I'm here today with my co-host, Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Heather. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How have you been?
I've been all right. I could do without the rain showing up, but I guess September is approaching.
That's true. Yes, but August has been pretty decent, so I don't think we could complain that much, maybe?
That's the most complaining I'm going to do this whole time, I promise.
Good. So what have you been doing with your August? Anything cool?
Going back to work. I did the classic July off and then went back to the office. So I've been kind of trying to avoid looking out the window and looking more into the gray spaces and back at the computer screens. I like my job. Again, no complaining, but it is a little hard to know there's a nice summer day behind me.
Well, exactly, especially when you know what's coming, that there's not that many days left. I think it would be, maybe in some countries, it's easier to go back to work if you have a lot of sunny days anyway. But just knowing that this is coming to a close, and now I sound depressing. Next step is darkness.
Well, I apologize for introducing it, but it does sort of feel like the movie of the summer starting to have the music wrapping it up. And
yeah, exactly. So let me introduce our guest for today, who is also from a sunny country, and that is Luisa from Brazil. Hi, Luisa.
Hi. So happy to be here. This is so exciting.
Wonderful. So Luisa, from what I remember about you, I don't think you did take your summer off, did you, in Sweden? You're one of those smart people who schedule your vacation for the bad months in Sweden, so you can actually get away from here.
Yes, I try to do that as much as possible, because it's also like easier to travel around in off season. But yeah, I've been working all summer, so pretty much no breaks. Yeah, it's been weird because now it's almost over, so I'm trying not to panic. but yeah, I can look forward to a pretty cool vacation that I'll go to next month.
That's a nice thing. Also, like, just for some people who don't live in Sweden or, I don't know, work different kind of jobs, can you describe what it's like to be in a Swedish office in July?
Oh, yes. It's quiet, very quiet. This was so strange for me when I started working in Swedish offices. Not something you would see in Brazil at all. So many people go on vacation, and the office is empty, and people expect that. That's normal, which was so crazy for me in the beginning. It's like, it's normal? We're going to almost stop working?
Pretty much, like, everybody knows nothing gets done in July, and people kind of schedule that. No projects release in July. I always think it must be interesting when you have a lot of customers that are from other countries, or also in international companies where you work with other countries, because it's hard to explain to people, like, yeah, I'm not going to be here this month, so let's just put this on hold. And then, of course, we have the classic, they always tell you, don't have a baby in July, don't get sick in July, because there's so few doctors and nurses, everybody's on vacation. That always got me.
It is very strange. Get used to it now, like four years in for me, I'm almost getting used to it.
Yeah. So you've been here 4 years then, or has it just been 4 years working?
About to be 4 years, actually, because I moved in November 2020. So it's going
to
be
rough year to move.
Yeah.
So strange. And I was thinking about this ahead of the podcast, and I was like, how did I do that? Like, I don't even know. Well, now looking back, it was so crazy. My husband got a job offer in the middle of the pandemic, and it was a very difficult decision to make at that time, but we did it.
Okay, so what was the reaction for your family? What was your reaction on moving? What did you expect?
It was crazy. So I had never been to Europe before, so it was a very scary thing to choose. I had lived in the US before, so I had a bit of experience moving to another country, but it was quite a big leap. Our family was sort of excited. Most of people were excited. It's something cool to do, and We had just moved in together, my husband and I, so it was sort of like, this could be cool. But, and of course, there's always the typical reaction of like, where is Sweden again? which was great. And it was a good question for us as well. Not that I knew a lot about Sweden before he got the job offer. So I think that was the main question of our family. Like, what is it like? What do you guys know about the country? What to expect? But people were excited for us. That made it easier.
What did you know? Or what did you think you knew?
Of course, like the first thing that we knew for sure was that it was cold and it was dark. That was about it. And everything else came with research. And we were lucky enough that we had a couple of friends that were already living in Stockholm for a few years. So the moment that we started considering this as a serious thing, we called them out and were like, okay, give us the real stuff. What is it like?
Were they like, don't come, don't do it? Or were they like, yeah, it'll be all right? Or
no,
or something else?
They were, I remember the conversation being very serious. It was not like too much like all flowers and beautiful stuff happening here. It was quite realistic. But they talked a lot about like the lifestyle and nature and just the sort of lagom culture that exists in Sweden. And they were also trying to figure out, like, because we hadn't spoken in many years. So they were talking to us, trying to figure out what was our style. Also, they were like, you know, it's pretty chill. Like, is it really for you? And we were like, yes, sounds amazing. It's like very chill, but sign us up. So we were quite excited to speak with them and learn a little bit more. And they were right. The first, of course, the pandemic changed everything of our experience. But now looking back, I think they were spot on and we've been super happy. It's been quite chill.
I'm curious if I may, not to get too in the weeds on this topic, but like the pandemic in particular was really interesting in Sweden. And it was kind of this, for better or worse, example of a different approach compared to the rest of the world. And a lot of things got projected onto that approach. A lot of people thought it was this, a lot of people thought it was that. But one thing that it was quite different, I think, than a lot of places in the world.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, I'm not asking you to say whether it was good or bad, but what was your experience like coming from one place and then landing in another place with a different approach?
It was very strange. And looking back, even the offer itself, like the timing of things was weird because we weren't expecting it. I think my husband was interviewing before the pandemic, and when the pandemic hit, everything came to a halt and we weren't expecting anything to be picked up, really. Then all of a sudden, there was this one company in Sweden that decided to continue the process. So that's where we learned that something was different in Sweden, because all the others were on a halt. And first, it was difficult to make that decision at that time, because it was an opportunity for us that we wanted without the pandemic. And then the opportunity came in the pandemic. And we were like, okay, so what do we do now? And things were very serious in Brazil in terms of things shutting down and, how do you call it? I lost the word in English.
Lockdown.
Yeah, let's call it the lockdown. So it was very strong in Brazil. We were living in our apartment pretty much all the time. And
were you allowed to go out? I know some countries you had to have special permission to go out. Some other countries you had to wash all of your groceries. And then, of course, the whole mask thing with a lot of different countries.
We didn't have the permission set. I know that there was a thing in Spain, I believe.
Yeah,
not
Italy
for us,
too.
But mask was mandatory, for example. A lot of limitations, of course, of how many people could be in one place at the same time. So if we went grocery shopping, it could have a chance that you wouldn't be able to go in. So that was a thing. And then we decided, okay, the opportunity has presented itself now. So we decided to go. There wasn't even vaccines at the time. It was super scary. And we arrived here and it was strange. It was like we had been in a completely different world where things were happening and here they weren't. So yeah. It was very strange, and I remember being very confused. We had been in the same routine for quite a while in Brazil with COVID. So we continued to do that for quite some time in Sweden. And I was even thinking, like, because we arrived in November, not only was COVID, but it was the darkest November in I don't know how many years.
Oh, you came in that year. I know exactly what year you mean. Yep, I remember.
I arrived, I think, on November 6th or something. So it was the beginning of the month. We didn't see the sun for many days. And my memory of it is just looking outside through the window of our apartment and just seeing like all the cute little apartments across the street and just thinking, oh my God, I'm Sweden. So it was super strange because, of course, it was an exciting time for us, such a big change. But it definitely took some time until we actually got to feel like we were living in Sweden because the initial months were very much at home, I would say.
Yeah, I think it's a tough time of year to arrive in any year. You know, you may have noticed it's not the most like outgoing country either on average too. So like, and in winter people really get inside their homes.
And I debated a lot about this because people ask like, oh my God, wasn't it super horrible because it was so dark? And I don't know if because it was a honeymoon phase for us, but I still have like good memories of it. I didn't suffer so much. The winter started to hit me in the second and third year. That was when it started to sink that, okay, it gets really dark for a long time.
What about, so I guess it was, your start was probably a little slower than some other people's because there were a lot of things you didn't get to experience at first, just with people not really gathering and a lot of things not being open. But can you remember like any cultural differences or things that you found really strange that maybe your friends had not prepared you for?
I would say that, you know, although it was the middle of the pandemic, I think about 6 months into our move, I started working at a Swedish company.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps.
So you meet people.
Yes. And it was quite quick because of COVID, I haven't really lived a lot in Sweden yet, but then I got the job. So it was right into that community. And I think one of the first funny stories that I came home to tell my husband was that I had a colleague that was working with me. In the middle of the conversation that she was having, that we were having, she did like the Swedish
the noise
affirmation.
Make.
Yes. And at the time, it sounded exactly like what you just did, Mark. And I immediately turned to her and said, you know, what's wrong? What happened?
What did you just realize?
Yeah.
What terrible thing. Wrong? Yeah.
Yeah. And then she laughed and she explained it to me. And that's how I learned it. And it was very embarrassing because I had just started working there. And I was so confused. So that's how I learned of the Swedish yes noise.
That it's a rite of passage.
Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah. I think we probably all have our stories. My story, I probably talked about this on the podcast before, but it was the first time I came to visit Måns and he was on the phone to his mom and I'm listening to his side and he's going, yeah. And afterwards, I'm like, what happened? Is everything okay? And he's like, yeah, why? I'm like, but you seem so shocked with your noises. He's like, oh no, that's just like a, oh, okay, kind of, you know, but it's terrifying.
It is. And I had a genuine concern at the time. I remember just looking, because I believe we met at the office for this, and I just looked around, and it was like, what's wrong? What happened? It was so embarrassing. Yeah, that was a good one.
You know, in the far north of Sweden, they have the same sound, except it's like even less vocalized. I don't know if you know this, but my partner's dad grew up north of this town called Haparanda near the Arctic Circle. And their sound, and I'm not from there, so I'm not going to do a great job, but it's basically, instead of it's just a little like little no vocalization, just like an intake of air with the lips hitting. So I don't know. That's a little fun fact for everybody there.
Yes, there's even different dialects when it comes to sucking in air.
Have you tried to incorporate this in your day-to-day at all? Or no? Because I wonder if, like, as a foreigner, when you're learning to speak Swedish, how long does it take for you to start using that in your day-to-day? That would be funny to know.
Yeah, I don't think I've started it yet, unless I'm not aware of it. So I really hope I don't adopt that. But who knows? I try to think, have I in all this time adopted any Swedish phrases? And I think the only thing that I do is sometimes I leave sentences off. Like when Swedes talk, sometimes they'll say, should we go to the movies or... And they just leave that "or" hanging, but in Swedish, you know, ska vi gå på bio eller. And I've also found that that's great when you don't know the correct way to finish your sentence in Swedish. I that's a little trick I do all the time too. So I sound very Swedish by just holding my sentence and not saying the rest. But half the time, I don't really know the next word anyway. But I find myself doing it in English as well. That's the only mannerism that I know that I've picked up on. I don't know. What about you, Mark? You've been here a while.
I don't know. I one of the things that I think prevents me from sounding like a local is that I don't really do those natural things that are kind of the... They're obviously, they're not nonverbal. They're often verbal, but they're kind of non-words. they can be words, too. Like, for example, obviously in Swedish to say ja, but you can also go aw. And it wasn't me, but a friend of mine, another American, when he started working here, he was in a meeting, and even though they worked in English, the meeting kind of switched to Swedish, and a lot of the people were just sitting there going aw, 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 aw. And he was like, what? It sounded like a bunch of seals.
Yes.
So I think I might sometimes say aw if I speak Swedish, but hopefully I don't. Sound like a chorus of seals.
Well, I have an interesting story because Louisa and I were working together and we talked about that. I wanted to bring this up on the podcast. We had a colleague from the States bring Pop-Tarts to the office, and just watching an international crowd trying to figure out how Pop-Tarts work was just fascinating to me, because I've grown up with Pop-Tarts, and somebody brought them, I don't think I was at work the day they came. So the next day I get to hear, you know, oh, there's Pop-Tarts in the kitchen. And some of the Swedes hadn't tried Pop-Tarts before. And I know that one girl said, well, yeah, I didn't really like it. It was very dry. And I said, well, you put it in the toaster, right? And she said, toaster? And then another Swede goes, what do you mean toaster? And I'm like, they're Pop-Tarts. They're supposed to pop out of the toaster? You're supposed to put them in the... Oh, they were just eating them dry. They had no idea. And then I said, but to me, it's obvious because it pops, like a toaster pops. And then another Swede said, well, I thought pop was like... It meant pop culture. Like, they're really cool to eat because they're pop culture tarts.
Fair enough.
Who was, is it you, Louisa? Because I think the next thing I want to say is probably your story. Didn't you leave them at home for your husband?
Yeah, no, I took them home, and I lived in the U.S., so I know Pop-Tarts. I've had them before, and I was very excited that I had them, but I didn't eat them right away, so I left it at home. And one day I'm at the office, and my husband, who hasn't lived in the U.S. before, though he has been there, I think he has ever had Pop-Tarts before, and he sent me a message. He was like, what are these? Can I eat it? And I was like, yeah, of course. And he said, well, what do I do? I was like, oh, you're supposed to at least heat them. And I knew that we didn't have a proper toaster at home, so I was like, just heat them up and eat it. Then let me know what you think. And then I get home, And I asked him, I was like, did you like it? And he was like, yeah, it was okay. And I was like, yeah, and did you eat both? And he's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And he was like, no, it was one. And I was like, no.
It comes it in a package two. Of two.
Yes. So it turns out that he just picked the whole thing out of the package. And he just ate it right there. And he didn't even heat them or anything. And then he turns to me and he's like, oh, now I understand why they were just falling apart. Because just took a whole bite out of the two Pop-Tarts that were probably a bit glued together, maybe.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
of everything. And I was like, no. So one, you didn't eat them right, and two, now there's none left for me. So yeah. Thank you very much.
Oh wait.
Yes, but that's the Pop-Tart experience at our home. I need to get my hands on another one so we can do it right.
Definitely. And I mean, you can find Pop-Tarts here, but they're so expensive. And for me, coming from the US, they don't cost much at all. And I can't justify paying that much for Pop-Tarts, you know, over here. So that's why I never get them. And that's why most people don't have them.
And I think there is a specific American store that exists in Stockholm, right? Is it American Tasty or something like that?
It's something like that. Yeah. Tasty American?
Tasty American, maybe,
there's been a few, and it changes all the time, but I think that's the current popular one.
Because, you know, based on this experience that my husband has put me through, I feel like I just need to buy it, no matter the cost, and just do it right.
Yeah, and show him, you know?
Yes.
This is what it's about. And he'll go, yeah, okay, it's all right. Have you brought any Brazilian food or cultural things that you've tried to introduce to other people?
Oh, for sure.
And how are the reactions?
It's usually, so there are so many things. Brazilian food is great. I love it. And
yes.
Every time that we go back, we've been to Brazil a couple of times and we always bring stuff back and we want to cook for everybody. I think the brigadeiros is the main thing, right? So it's like
I love brigadeiros. Yes,
the chocolate truffle thing, but specific for Brazil, is made of with condensed milk and cocoa powder. And I remember also in my first job here, I would find any excuse to make and bring it to people just to see people's reaction. Usually Brazilian sweets are considered very sweet to foreigners, so that's usually the reaction. It's like, oh, this is very sweet.
Especially very Swedes.
Way.
Yeah, because really? the sweets, I think, in Sweden aren't as sugary as they are in the US and probably Brazil. What's your opinion, Mark?
Well, I probably shouldn't have opened my mouth. I'm just not a huge, like, sugar person. It's fine. I like stuff, but I don't, like, chase it that much. So maybe I'm not the person to ask. But this is just the country where you see lines of people very far into adulthood lined up at candy stores any day of the week, filling bags and eating candy by the handful. So
that's,
I don't know.
True. Saturday candy.
So the aggregate sweetness or sugar intake must be very high. Whether it's as sweet as, I don't know this dessert, and it sounds really good, so I'm going to have to try it. But
Yeah, you have to try it.
But that's just why I was surprised, because this is the land of ice and snow and candy for sure.
And good pastries. But what I noticed is when my kids were small, I would make cupcakes and American birthday cakes with frosting, and they don't do frosting here. It's too much sugar. Even kids did not want the frosting. Yeah, that's how messed up it is. When kids don't want that much sugar, something weird is happening.
Because I think they do more of the cream, like beaten cream without a lot of added sugar, it seems like.
Yeah.
So usually the same for Brazilian cakes as well, is like a lot of sugar, condensed milk, and this and that. So it can be a little bit overwhelming, I guess. But I find any excuse that I have to introduce them to people. I've made a couple for you, Heather. So
yes,
I'm very
thank
proud.
You.
But very proud of Brazilian brigadeiros for sure.
Yes, you should be. And I've noticed, I don't know, are there any Brazilian restaurants in Stockholm or anywhere else in Sweden that we should know about? I've seen food trucks, and I get very excited about food trucks. Yeah. But I also think you were telling me there was a store where you could buy also supplies or groceries.
Yes, there are a couple, but there are two places in Kungsholmen, that's a neighborhood in Stockholm, that are Brazilian-owned, which is super cool. And one is a restaurant. It's called Boteco da Silvana, which is a very Brazilian name for a restaurant that is in Stockholm. So they serve food. And then there's, I think it's Brazil & Co., which is a store that sells Brazilian produce. Which is, so, and they have events every now and then, and they are right next to each other. So they do a lot of special stuff together, and I love going there and just eating, of course.
That's so cool. Is there anything like we should know about that's good to go get at the Brazilian store?
Well, the restaurant serves feijoada, which is the rice and beans plate. Mm-hmm. It's a typical meal in Brazil. So that's one. And that Brazilian co sells awesome brigadeiro made from like local Brazilians that make brigadeiro, like a homemade, and they sell it at the store. It's amazing. But they also have just regular produce that we would find in a Brazilian household. We do a lot of how do you call it? But they have a really great like frozen meals that you can have. It's really easy to choose. When you're going to a Brazilian store that serves food, pretty much pick whatever. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What sort of produce? Are there any types of produce that you mentioned that they're specific to Brazil produce? I guess they're shipping it from
there? Yes, they do.
And it's what are some of the best things that come across the ocean to us?
Oh, this would be very weird, but we have typical flours that we would use that we would make what we call farofa, which is sort of a savory side dish that you would have with rice, beans, and some sort of protein. And they sell in package, which is like gold for Brazilians, because then we can buy the package of flour and make the farofa at home with pork meat and onions and all the seasoning that we like. And that is kind of difficult to find, so I usually go there for it. But I know that they also sell some of those produce in the Rotoriet market, which is also like a more central place to go to. But that would be my go-to. And also, if you ever find Guaraná, which is the like a typical Brazilian soda, you also want to have your hands on those. They are very good.
Okay, I have to try that now. Yes. Well, I mean, I think we're also asking because we've discovered sometimes you can also find ingredients that you would get at the normal grocery store, but they're a lot cheaper if you go to the Indian market or the Asian market. Sometimes it's the same things, just different brands, and they don't cost as much. So it's nice to know the little secrets.
Yeah.
Also, like for me, at New Year's, we usually eat black-eyed peas, which is so difficult to find in Sweden. And I found them at the Indian store. So it's, you know, little things like that. Sometimes it's really good to know, like, what specialty shops might have something you can't find normally or that's more expensive, but it's cheap over there. Or something. So that's,
And for Brazilian food, we rarely, at least I rarely see it in regular grocery stores. It's very niched, I feel.
Yeah, so, I would think so.
Yeah, so, but we were lucky to have this couple of stores here that we can go to every now and then.
So I have to ask a follow-up question, sort of a separate topic, but also the exact same topic. Swedish food. Thoughts? Feels?
That was so easy for me because I don't know, I'm a big foodie. So the moment, this was one of the first things that I heard about before moving to Sweden, was the fika culture. And fika in general. So that was one of the first things that I ate in Sweden, pretty much. And I, at least in the fika side of things, I love literally everything. And I've been very happy about it. But what about you?
Oh, ooh. The tables have turned.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've been here for about, what is it, 11? Oh, man, it's coming up on 12 years. It'll be 12 years in November, because I came here in November as well.
Oh.
And, you know, I got to say that the food situation has gotten so much better. You know, there was just not as much ingredients, frankly, and so there are fewer people doing fewer things with fewer ingredients than the restaurant and food truck and grocery store situation has really exploded. So this is a long way to avoid answering your question. I'm not really sure, like, I'm not a huge fan of, like, Swedish food per se myself, although I totally agree with you. The fika culture of both the culture and the actual baked goods, in spite of me saying I don't like sweets, I think there's, like, just enough sweetness without it being too much. I think that's very nice. So I think like my favorite thing is probably around Christmas time when the saffron stuff comes out. I think that that's really special and nice. And I also like that they have this kind of seasonality to their food as a concept, because it's sort of like breaks out of the let's have like 100% consumerism all the time kind of vibe that I'm used to in the US. And it says it's like, hey, this is special. It exists within this window for this reason. I think that's really nice.
I agree. Yeah. It's also like, you know, the saffron buns, they are for Christmas. That's when they come out, is the month of December. And then after that, we have the Simla. And that's only for like 2 months or so. And it makes it special, I think. I think it's nice. It makes it more of a tradition, more of something to look forward to, because you need things to look forward to. The Yule must, the Polsk must. Mm-hmm. I have to ask, have you ever gotten from the other direction Swedes or anybody who make assumptions about Brazil that are totally crazy?
There is. The first thing that comes to mind is that whenever I say that I'm from Brazil to someone that's local, they immediately ask why. Why did this happen? Why are you here?
Why are you here?
Why are you here? I would not have done that. So that's usually the reaction. And honestly, that by itself surprises me a bit, because I kind of have the assumption that people would have seen more people from South America and they wouldn't be that surprised that someone would make that choice. That's usually the reaction, but I can't think of anything that they would make a big assumption about. I face that much more in the US itself, I would say, than I've done here.
Really? Now I'm curious. What did people in the US think of Brazil?
I think they just see, like, America in general as I'm sorry, the US as the whole of America. So it was sometimes I remember having conversations with people to understand the concept of South America. I remember very vividly that conversation, unfortunately, with someone from the US, which I haven't had here. So
yes. So education in Sweden, a little pretty good, huh?
we know geography in the US can leave something to be desired, so I guess
a bit. So let me guess, did they think you meant that Brazil was in the southern part of the US, or they just couldn't fathom
I think because and this is going to take a turn, but I think I had someone ask me about, like, how things worked in terms of ethnicity in Brazil, and I think they were surprised that I wasn't just said Latin in my it didn't say just she's Latin in my Brazilian documentation. I had to say no, it's people here could be considered Latin, but in Brazil, that's not a thing. Yeah. So I remember having that conversation. Like, they thought that, you know, there wasn't such thing as like a person of color or a white person that was Latin. That was a strange conversation to have. I remember there was like, no, you know, I'm considered a white person in Brazil. And they were like, no, you're Latin. Oh, yeah, that's true, but in Brazil, not exactly. That's wouldn't be how we would say it in my documentation.
So on behalf of America, let us apologize.
Okay. No, and it's a humongous country.
Yeah, there are
a lot of different characters in the U.S. for sure. Haven't had those conversations here yet. So
yeah, good.
Yeah. In the world, but I lived in the U.S. 10 years ago. So also, I think a lot has changed.
Yeah, it's been a while. Let's hope.
That's charitable.
Yeah,
a lot has changed, but yeah. I don't know. Not sure if we've gotten more better, aware of it. But I appreciate that kindness.
Yeah. But I wanted to ask, because it's about time to start wrapping things up a little. Oh. And do you have any tips for anyone? Things that doesn't have to be Stockholm, just anything in Sweden that you think people might like to know about, or something you discovered that was kind of cool?
Something, I wouldn't say that is something that I discovered that was cool, but if I, you know, if the person listening to this is someone that recently moved or is thinking about moving, I would say when you get here, enjoy just the nature space that Sweden has to provide. I think, you know, I was trying to think of special places and museums and restaurants and all, but really the most memorable things that I've done in Sweden have been just being on the road, being in open space, in nature parks. That's the best that Sweden has to offer, I would say. So do that and enjoy the sea. I mean, we're in mid-August now, and it's been like, the summer is the best. Like, just go to the water, go walk around. That's mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite spots, some of your favorite nature spots? Like, I like to go to Nacka Nature Reserve and pick blueberries and lingonberries.
That is a good one. We've been really enjoying being by the water around Kungsholmen, but to the quiet areas of Kungsholmen. So that's like Kristineberg and Fredhall. So
with the cliffs.
Yes, exactly. They're it's cliffs. Really nice there, yeah. And this Monday was just like a beautiful sunny Monday, and just at the end of the workday, we just went out there and spent a couple of hours in the water, and it was amazing. That's been one of my favorites. And also Vinterviken Park.
Vinterviken. Yeah, Vinterviken.
Yes.
Where the Alfred Nobel dynamite old tunnels are, and there's so many pretty gardens there, cafe, restaurant. I like that area too. What about you, Mark? What are some of your favorite nature places?
And there are obviously a ton of really nice places. I've recently been spending a lot of time in Haga Park, which is like a big, nice expanse. And every once in a while you like hit a fence and a bunch of security cameras. And you're like, oh, right, the royal family lives here in this park. And then you're like, oh, right, there's a royal family. At least that's how I feel every time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really nice. And all the places you named. But of course, every Swede will always say, and I totally get it, like, you know, the archipelago, there's so many nice places there. And I mean, you mentioned the sea and the water. You probably meant that to some extent too, or at least could have, I'm sure. Like that's like kind of an endless landscape. I think, I don't know, like Sweden has, I think, the most islands of any country in the world. I mean, like more than like places like the Philippines or Indonesia or Finland, you know, so it's pretty impressive.
And it's also fairly easy to get on a boat and just do like a little day trip. One that I take a lot of people on is the boat to Vaxholm. It's not very expensive. I want to say it's like 100, 150 crowns or so. So $10-$15. I can't remember. It's been a while. And you can go to Vaxholm, but you get to see a lot of the little islands on the way. It's only an hour. And you can even take a bus back from the island if you don't want to pay to take the boat again. I think that's an easy one for people to cheaply see some of the beautiful islands. And it's a good summer activity. Yeah, good tip with the nature. We got to suck it all in as much as we can before it's all covered in snow, which is a different kind of nice nature, but a little darker.
Yeah, just a little. You can enjoy at least a few weeks of skiing, maybe, if you're into it.
Yeah, and then go on vacation is exactly my advice after that.
One thing I always say about winter in Sweden, and I've heard other people say it too, I'm not trying to claim this, but that when it actually snows, you're happier because it's so much brighter, just the landscape in general. So I think there's something really special about the snow in wintertime. We really need it to offset the darkness.
Yeah, when people complain about the snow, I'm like, do not complain about the snow. It's beautiful and it's brighter. Yeah. Complain when it's winter and there's no snow, because that is the worst.
Yeah, then it's a double bummer for sure.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Luisa, for joining us today and talking to us about Brazil. And now I've got to go check out your store that's in your area and go get some brigadeiros and see what else they got.
Please do. And let me know what you think afterwards. But thank you so much for having me. This is really nice.